is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Energy for our allies, the European Union. The reporting these last days, Kadri Simpson, the EU's energy commissioner, says that it is doable for the EU to replace 2/3 of Russian gas in 2022. To break that into pieces, industry in the EU uses 27% of the gas that they receive from chiefly Russia, using it for chemicals, ceramics, food, and glass production. The Commission, the European Commission says it would protect key supply chains for food, security, health, and safety products. In other words, food security is not secure, health security is not secure, and what is to be done? I welcome Henry Sokolsky, the executive director of the Nonproliferation Policy Education Center, who's going to take us to the challenge that Europe faces now with the on-again, off-again threats from Russia, some of it on-again, and with the prospect of replacing its dependency on Russia as quickly as possible. Henry, a very good evening to you. Europe is presenting this case as doable. Do you agree? Good evening.
Good evening. With a lot of effort, they can do some of it and maybe most of it for the short run. And the reason you can be a little optimistic is they're willing initially through, I think, the end of this year, maybe through next winter, to spend an inordinate amount of money buying up natural gas from markets that are very tight. And I think because of that, there's a reason to believe there'll be enough natural gas stored to keep life and limb together into the fall, which is important if you want to be showing a stiff upper lip in dealing with the Ukraine war and Putin. However, it is not going to be easy, and it's going to be very expensive to have that natural gas at the levels that they're at. To give you some idea, just in a year, the cost of natural gas on the spot markets for Europe has climbed, sevenfold. Fivefold. That's a big jump. We pay, for example, just to give you some idea, about $9 for a million BTUs. They're spending 33. So they're spending, and that's going to slow down their economy. They may, as you mentioned, have to ration first, cutting off industry from the natural gas, unless they have a change of heart and increase the amount of Russian gas flowing in.
What is to be done for Europe? The Estonian commissioner, I learned from the Financial Times, said that Brussels, that's the euphemism for the European Union, expects more gas from the U.S. and Norway. U.S., moving liquefied natural gas makes money. I know that we're building facilities and we're preparing to ship liquefied natural gas to Europe. Can we do it fast enough for what they need? Not according to the European Union, because their liquefied natural gas receiving ports are unfortunately placed in the far reaches of the European Union over in Spain, and their pipelines are inadequate. So I'm not trying to judge the EU. I'm just mentioning that all this adds up to not yet. How severe a shortage are they going to meet, Henry? You say it's price, but there are price limits for customers.
Well, one of the neat things about markets is they tell you the answer in time. I know the prices are going to continue to climb. The tightness of the natural gas market globally is tightening. The capacity is already spoken for with long-term contracts. This is true even for Russia. It cannot move its natural gas into Asia all that easily. It doesn't have the pipelines, and it has become dependent on Europe as a market. So this hurts Russia too. This is the reason we've sanctioned them off from selling, because we're trying to get them to relent on Ukraine. I just think it's very tight. You're not going to see a major relief with all of the devices, probably for, you know, 36 months. And in that intervening period, it's going to be an expensive energy market, and certainly natural gas and electricity prices are going to reflect that in Europe. And to a much lesser extent, we'll see it at home.
Have they got renewables to make up for any of the demand of electricity?
Well, yes. I think what's kind of stunning, because I mean, we've gotten into the habit of bad-mouthing the Birkenstock sector. I think they're about 30% of the electricity now is coming from renewables annually. And I think the real story that hasn't been told is the investments over the next 36 months that will be made in the grid to make the massive grid in Europe handle this intermittent electricity in a way that performs kind of like a large battery. And that will make a major impact on the amount of natural gas that will be needed to power or generate electricity. So that's a hidden story that people have not talked much about, but it'll have a bit of an impact, but not right away.
Yes, you say that they can get through this year if they pay for it, meaning they can get into winter if they pay for it. So where is the crisis moment? Is it next summer, the winter of 25?
There may not be a crisis, but it's going to be a test of how persistent and hardy the political will in Europe is to be paying a higher prices for the period before they can get some of the solutions, which, you know, there's a long list we can go through, come online. Now, some of this is buying gas and getting gas contracts with Algeria and Qatar, moving some gas beyond current levels from the U.S. Some of it is, the grid. Some of it is, efficiencies that be required. Some of it is renewables. I mean, but none of these things are going to come on in the next year in any significant way. The price signal is what's going to come on. It'll go up. But my hunch is that with each passing year, it will be less dire. The question is, is there the political will to put up with those price strains?
The short answer is no. Henry, the natural gas story from the U.S. or from anywhere has learned that you need to talk price when you're talking about long-term contracts. The U.S., is it going to talk price with the Europeans before we build LNG plants? Right now, my understanding is we don't build it until we have contracts in hand. We have to have a customer and a guarantee before we expense this scale of investment. Is that something that the Europeans are ready to put down their money and pay that high price indefinitely?
Well, we'll find out. I mean, if somebody told you they knew the answer, I would run away from them. I don't think we know. But right now they are paying to get long-term contracts any which way they can. And I think that's the reason why there's interest in investing in various projects in the United States to get that to them, because they can get the firm long-term contracts that they need to capitalize the construction of these depots.
This is for liquefied natural gas. Is it the same story for oil? Do they have the same shortfall in oil that they have in natural gas?
It's not as dire, but yes, they do. And because Russia supplies a fair amount of oil, and you've got to find workarounds on that front. And, again, electrification of your transport sector is not quick or easy. I think the Europeans are leaning into it more than we are, and it's still not a quick process.
I read a word that frightens people: rationing. I read this word on the front pages of London these last days. Is that a scare headline, or is that reasonable to where we're going to be this winter and next winter?
I think effectively high prices is a form of rationing, and it will hit the industrial producer that needs the energy first. And the reason why is the politicians in each capital will try to protect the consumer, who is a constituent who votes. And so there will be subsidies, checks sent back to each consumer. But I think industry will find its prices having to go up because they may not be able to get the energy to operate at the levels that they might otherwise want to. Now, part of this will be taken care of by inflation. It's called a recession. I mean, you know, the demand will go down as the prices go up. So we're sort of headed to an economic brownout. It's not a blackout. Yeah.
What's worst case scenario for Europe right now? Can we see a worst case scenario?
There's always hope for something to go terribly wrong. I mean, you know, fine, but I'm not comfortable, predicting the end of the world economically. I think it's too damn complex to be able to figure, other than that we are headed for an increasing squeeze.
Oh, I'll take brownouts over blackouts. We're going to go national next, the U.S. energy picture from the point of view of the Biden administration and what we're paying at the pump and electricity rates right now. This is CBS Eye on the World with Henry Sikorski, the executive director of the Non-Proliferation Policy Education Center. I'm John Batchelor.